Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Well, this week, soybeans broke 73 cents, corn dropped 35. Is it enough, or will the slide continue? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jackie Vakes of the Stewart Peterson Group. Our panelists today in studio are Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and Tom Mann with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Just so everybody knows, we're dealing with real numbers and not pennies. It's quite likely the average Illinois farmer lost about $30,000 to $40,000 of potential income over the last week. So the dollars are on the table, and you're in charge of salvaging what hasn't already been priced. What do you do, Kurt Kimmel?
Well, it's actually billions when you look at the group as a whole, and it's a dramatic drop all at once. At this point in time, I don't know if you're really panicking and throwing the towel here. If you want some downside protection here, I think you got to be evident of buying some put options to put more of a floor under you instead of being a seller here. Longer term, we're optimistic. We feel we're going to have a major low in the complex in the next 30 to 45 days.
Tom Mann?
Well, you know, numbers are just numbers, and the weather is the weather, and it's all still kind of up in the air. I do, however, believe that for the most part, the farmers have taken advantage and got some of the crops sold. A good portion of them have crop insurance, which already gets a put in there for them at 406. So having lost may be a good thing for some, bad thing for others, and we're just going to have to watch the weather.
Tom Mann, of course, with Strategic Farm Marketing. Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing.
Well, I would agree with both of these guys. I think that you stand aside right now. I think that, your opening question is it enough? I don't know that it's enough, but we're probably getting close here. I agree with Tom's comment that the weather is still a lot to come. We should take note that, you know, four out of the top five producing states, the conditions dropped last Monday. So I think you just stand aside. You know, we've been saying all along, don't get into a position where you are forced to sell something, and as long as you're not in that position, I think you just stand aside right now.
Bill, I'd like to take up the spreads just a bit as we read through the numbers for the corn and the wheat to begin with. September corn this week at 348 and a quarter high, low at 315 and a quarter. Their settlement, and this is a new lead option settlement, 318 and a quarter. So last week it was a different month, but the difference was 23 and a quarter from Friday to Friday. On the SEP, December futures, 333.5. They were down 35. And as a reminder, we give you the overnight session and the day session as one long session for the week. And that includes the highs and the lows. September wheat, 638.5 on the high this week. Low at 599 and a quarter. September settled at 616 and a quarter as the new lead option. It was up 2 and a quarter. December at 633 and a quarter, down 2 cents. So we've got corn down 35. In the Dease, and Dease wheat was down just 2 cents. What was happening with the spreads this week at all, if anything?
The wheat-corn spread?
Yep.
Well, the wheat here just seems to be the Energizer bunny. You know, it just kind of keeps going and going in light of some very weak corn and bean markets. I think it's strictly based on the fundamentals. I think that we had the big drop here a couple of weeks ago, tried to scare out the weak longs and did a pretty good job of that. But the European situation over there and some of the drought that they have in the some of the big wheat growing areas, I think, is what's in this market. The stocks worldwide, there's just a lot of concern. And corn, you know, on the other hand, we had good rains across a pretty good portion of the belt and probably increased the crop size.
When you look at the global supply, like Bill said there, it's record tight, historically tight. We saw that spread go out to a record level. There's bulls touting $7, $7.50 wheat going to all-time highs. You've got over 50 million bushels of wheat still in the field in Kansas and Oklahoma. The cutters have already moved north, so they're going to have to come back and get that. So we're in jeopardy of getting that wheat crop out. Plus, too, if we turn hot and dry out in the western belt here this late summer, early fall, it could jeopardize getting the wheat in the western belt this fall and create more havoc.
Any of your clientele thinking that they might want to put soft red winter wheat in the ground this spring when they haven't, or this fall when they haven't before?
Very much so. When you look at the cost and return in there, as long as wheat dollar stays up here, we're buying a lot of wheat acres.
I want to come back now, Tom, to the corn market just a bit, because Strategic Farm Marketing deals quite a bit with the crop insurance, and I want to ask you how it is that you view that now and what the payouts are likely to look like, and what farmers should be thinking about, I guess, in terms of what they already have on the books and as risk management goes.
Well, obviously, as I said earlier, the 406 number on corn has become kind of a put area. Now, I'm not saying that's going to hold. A lot of things can happen with weather. We've got quite a bit of corn sold, anywhere from 70 to 85% in some cases. So we're looking for this drop, and we're hoping that we don't have a repeat of last year where we had prices tail off going into August and September, and then a recovery in October, and it took out the highs, and obviously there were no claims. Now, this year, people have taken kind of advantage or another stance. They've added additional protections, like on some of the county products, there's an HRO, a harvest revenue option available. Some of them are using that. We have seen a huge increase in crop insurance use, and I think it's because it's really actually cheaper than using a put.
I'd like to poll you. What's the greater opportunity for a move at this point? Is it a move lower in the corn market or a move higher in the corn market? A substantial move.
I guess I think long term here that you're probably going to see some follow through to the downside first before you see any substantial rebound. But in all fairness, too, I think on the put situation, a producer needs to realize that as your production grows, as your yield per acre grows, that put option actually goes down, which is good because your revenue is still going up. That's good. And also, just going to mention, Tom, I think the period for the wheat, since Todd mentioned wheat before, the period's in August, isn't it, where they determine the price for the...
Correct.
Yeah.
Short term, obviously, with the weather cooperating, over the next 30 to 60 days, the risk is to the downside. But after that, the move is huge to the upside. Because if you look at what cash is doing, the wide basis in here, I would be a buyer of cash corn. Looking at the 08 corn, 09 close to $4, I can stack on the ground and make $1.50.
Okay, I want to go back and clarify one thing very quickly. The period for wheat, and that's the period at which it's going to set the federal crop insurance, just like corn did in February. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, that's what.
So it's the month of August.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what he was referring to.
I just wanted to make sure that was relatively clear, not right. Crystal, but clear enough that everybody should understand it. Let's talk a little bit about soybeans. August contract, a high this week of 908. They're low at 828.5. Their settlement is lead option. The new lead is at 850.25. They were down 63.25 from last week. November beans off 73.5 cents at $8.75.25. We're still way up in the $8 range on the bean market. Any reason to get worried about this one at all?
Well, it's weather and world demand. You know, you look at energies and outside markets are higher, but we all well know August makes or breaks the bean crop. I think the mentality is it's 850 level, 845 is going to be critical support, and we should be able to stay above that until we get a better handle on the weather.
$9 beans in the offing?
No, I think we're going back to $9. I just don't know how big the demand is going to be. You're going to get to a point where pricing becomes an issue. Right now we've got European mills that are producing biodiesel been shut down for 2 months. It's just not feasible to run them.
I'll tell you, maybe I've been going to too many meetings with Kurt over there. if this 844 gap holds on the November beans, I think the chart formation really looks pretty bullish on beans. I think $9 is definitely in the offing.
$9 on the futures market, but the cash basis?
Cash is going to stay pretty wide for a while, I'm afraid.
Yeah, on beans and corn both. And are they both going to widen out from here on into the harvest season, you think?
I don't think the commercial is going to be in a hurry to buy, put it that way. I think he's going to stack the big pile out front and say, well, I can't get trains, I can't get trucks, I can't get barges. And about halfway through harvest or like October or whenever, all of a sudden, you got any for sale?
Okay.
I think David asked me that on Thursday afternoon. I think the way to approach that is, I think there, you know, it's not a given that the basis on corn has to get wider, but it sure isn't going to get a lot better, I don't think. So I don't think there's any sense to take a risk on the basis because it could get wider under the right circumstances.
So is the market at the moment, and I want to go back through this real quick, the market at the moment is telling farmers to do what with their corn? Go ahead and store it?
It's telling them to store corn and beans right now.
And soybeans. Correct. And then I want to ask the question on the old crop wheat. Is it telling it to do what with old crop wheat at this point, if they've got it? Should they go ahead and market it, or do they want to store that too?
Well, as a producer here, we're at small, lofty levels. I think you ring the cash register, get your money. If you want to own it, we've got some replacement strategies that are just ideal to get you in there where you know exactly what your risk management is.
Yeah, bin space is going to be at a premium this fall. You don't want wheat sitting in it.
You don't want wheat in your bin?
Not at these prices.
I don't think there will be anybody that does that, but just in case there is.
It would be different if you're in a wheat area more than central Illinois or eastern.
While we're talking about wheat, there's another spread, too, that ought to be observed, and that's probably the KC wheat versus the Chicago wheat. Chicago wheat has run amok, and I don't understand quite why, because we have enough supply of soft red winter wheat. The wheat that's really hurt is the white, the hard red winter, the hard wheats from the western territory, and I don't understand why Chicago is outpacing KC. So I think that's going to correct itself one of these days.
Well, the export market is the main thing. When you look at these countries, Syria shutting down, we saw Egypt come forward here, we saw Bangladesh come forward here. So, you know, that the export market is what we got to watch. We got to keep the export market strong to keep the wheat market on solid footing.
September oats this week, $2.40. We're off 30 for the week. From the livestock side over at the Mercantile Exchange, futures finished like this. The lean hogs, August contract at 75.97.5. On their high, the low at 72.55, a settlement price hits a new lead, up $4.85 at 73.87.5, and the July bellies at $93 even were up a buck. August live cattle, 92.60 for the high, the low at 90.75, a settlement price down 80 cents at 90.82.5, and the August feeders at 115.50 were up $1.65. USDA had a July cattle on feed report released Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. It set the on feed as of July 1 at 99%, placed in June at 85%, marketed in June at 97%. Most are saying it's either neutral, friendly, or bullish if you really want to go out on a limb. What do you say on Monday morning?
The early calls are 20, 25 higher. Of course, you look at the numbers, you can see that type. But you got to remember the back end's already at a premium there, so how much bullishness is already built in. Longer term, we're optimistic on these numbers.
And then do you want to talk about the Chinese in the hog market for the week? They're in, they're out, they're in again? Which way?
We'll be different come Monday, but blue ear disease has got concerns about pork production in that country. You got to remember they raise a lot more numbers as the world's largest meat producer in hogs and cattle both, so therefore those numbers are a smaller percentage of their herd.
Extremely large numbers, 10%. Loss over there would be about half the hogs we raise over here, so it can mean something to the export market. And hogs have gone up about $6 this week, so you know, with corn dropping and hog prices going up. I think the livestock producer as well as the ethanol producer has gained some margin this week.
Half of the world's hogs are raised in that one nation, more than 400 million animals annually. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
I'm Maria Peters with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois this past week has seen a series of short waves rotating into the area, pushing cold fronts into the state and bringing with them associated thunderstorms and severe weather. During the early part of the week, the fronts mostly impacted the northern counties, and this has resulted in a sharp differential in the temperatures and precipitation across Illinois. The northern tier has seen up to 500% of normal rainfall for the week and below average temperatures, while parts of the south are just at 25% of normal for precipitation and experiencing seasonal warmth. For example, during the Monday to Thursday time period, Moline received nearly 4.5 inches of rain, almost a half an inch above the normal precipitation for the entire month of July, while Carbondale had only 1/10 of an inch of rain. The end of the week finally brought precipitation to the southern portion of the state, and following that last frontal passage, cooler and drier air from central Canada. This weekend should feel almost fall-like, with clearer skies and below normal temperatures, but as next week begins, an upper-level ridge across the plains will build eastward, bringing seasonal warmth and humidity back into the region. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Maria Peters.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to WILL Urbana. This is Commodity Week. Our panelists today are Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joining us today from the Stewart Peterson Group in West Bend, Wisconsin, is the Senior Market Advisor, Jackie Vakes. Our guest writes articles for Successful Farming and Stewart Peterson's website, as well as the Outlook page in the Top Producer magazine. Thanks for joining us today, Jackie. We appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, please tell me a little bit about the cash bids across the Midwest for corn, how they vary, and if you can, maybe you could lay out a scenario for a farmer in those driest areas. I'm thinking probably up in the Tri-County area, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and somebody who's sitting in a place where they might have a potential bin buster.
Wow. Well, cash bids, of course, have varied a great deal. We've seen the drop this week actually produce some positive cash bids in old crop corn. Pushed new crop corn wider in a lot of places, and I think that wideness is reflected because there's a couple different things going on. We're going to have storage issues and handling issues, I think was referred to on the program before, and I think another thing that we have to think about when we're looking at cash, and this goes for the guys who are bin busting sides, not necessarily the people who have a shorter crop, but we've got 52.5 cents carry on the close today between DSO 7 and DSO 8. At 52.5 cents, it's a tremendous incentive for a commercial to buy as much grain as they can get their hands on because of the fact that they can turn around and sell to the end users off the board and have a very nice, comfortable position from a profit standpoint. And so we already are hearing, like in the Dakotas, parts of Nebraska, that the elevators are telling people, if you're going to be bringing grain in here, you don't have it contracted, we have to store it on the ground, we're nailing you 50 cents right up front. Or you're going to sell it to us 100%. And I think, it's just a reflection of what's going on. So for those guys, I've still been using puts. I know I have a lot of people who have crop insurance at the 85% level, but 85%, if you take that down to 100% coverage, is still only 345. So I think puts are still a good opportunity. For the guys who are really short, it's really tough because it varies so much. The pockets are all over the place, you know, as far as what is really short. You know, so you may have a circumstance where you have one fellow who oversold his position, and he's in big trouble, and the next fellow is sitting there on the opposite side, and 10 miles away from him, the weather's bad, and where he is, it isn't so bad. So there's still a big question out there as to what their storage situations are going to be, too. And so I think their best bet is to try and protect price if they haven't made the sales. If they've made the sales, I'm 100% in the camp that, you know, 30 to 45 days from now, we could see a very big move up. And you guys talked about it primarily because of the wheat planting. I think we're going to see a tremendous push on the market in the corn market itself in a battle for acres with wheat. And is basis going to get better at that point in time? I don't think so. At least not for right now, and not until we get to a point where they have all the grain in that they could possibly want.
Well, Jackie, looking at the futures price, what type of downside risk from here do you see that's possible?
December, I think, you know, I'd say 320, 310, perhaps at an outside. I guess I base that on a couple of different things. One being that, you know, the bin programs, and I don't know how many have hit you guys, but they're really the bin programs that came out into the Iowa Minnesota area are huge. Those guys are guaranteed 280 cash, okay, in those programs, and so over the next 3-year period. So if you're looking at that, it's very unlikely that when you look at the size of the people that offered those programs, that they expect that this market is going to go a great deal lower than that at any point in time.
Yeah, Jackie, Tom, Ann. As trashed up as these charts are at the present time, do you think we stand any chance of going back and filling some of these gaps that were created on the downside move?
What kind of a time frame are you asking me, Tom?
Before harvest.
Before harvest?
Yep.
Oh, I think we could, but it probably wouldn't be until we got closer into harvest, with the exception that I'd have to say that if we could ever get a weather forecast right, and if we would see the heat truly come in, I think that the trade is acting just like the old days. The crop's made, is what they think. Well, we need every bushel and every kernel of corn we can get our hands on. And so I think, you know, we'd see corn probably trade higher on the back of beans. It wouldn't move as much.
Can I ask one more question of you, Jackie, before I get away from you here? As far as the demand picture is concerned, we're seeing a lot of our ethanol plants kind of, I don't know if they're going up in smoke or not, but the revenue's running away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that not change the demand picture somewhat? And what do you think that's going to have, or what effect, net effect, do you think that'll have?
Well, I don't know. You know, from the demand picture, I don't think it's going to change it a lot. One of the things that we're seeing a problem with, of course, is just like home building. You only have so many people that build ethanol plants, and they're behind. So I think the demand situation is going to be reduced for this year. But I think by September of next year, we'll see it. You know, we'll have 12.6 billion bushel or billion gallon capacity with the plants that are currently committed to being built and the expansions. I think we're going to see Congress come in here in not too long, and we're probably going to see a mandate that they're going to try and push across the U.S. for ethanol usage. And if they were successful at the level that we are in the mandated states right now, that's 15.6 billion demand. So I don't know. You know, and the one question I always have to come back and ask is, you know, to me, the ethanol plants in the past have been a lot like Enron. You know, it wasn't hard to make money. You didn't have to be a great manager to make money. And in most cases, they're still making money. They're just not making as much.
They're making more this week than they did last week.
Yeah.
Jackie, let's switch to the beans a minute. Let's take a producer sitting out here that maybe has some minor sales, doesn't have any storage for his beans. Going to be taking them into the elevator at harvest, and, you know, basis is very poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he's going to need cash sometime between now and, the middle of January. I mean, what type of strategy should he be looking at out there?
Well, I tell you what, with that type of a scenario, what I've been starting to do is use the basis contracts that they offer on the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, and they've really been pretty good. They have a guaranteed market maker right now, so I think the best thing that a person could do is if you've got no place to store it, you need the cash, I think you go and you need to do it. Basis is extremely wide. You buy the Minneapolis Grain Exchange basis contract, you know, and you go from there.
Is there any liquidity in that market?
It's improved. Since they have the market makers, it's definitely improved. You know, and same way in the corn market, too. So, yeah, I've just started using it again. I had used it when it first came out. But I think that's a viable way to look at it. You know, what else is he going to do? You know, just sit on it?
I want to go back to something Tom mentioned about the gaps in the market.
Mm-hmm.
because there are gaps there, both coming down for both the corn and the soybeans on the harvest month, but they're only in the pit trade.
I was just going to say that.
And they're not, and they're not in the composite trade, which is the electronic and the overnight trade. Tell me about the difference between those two, and on the technical side, how you view that. I mean, is there one that's better to look at this moment? Are we still in a decisive in a deciding point, and eventually it will be the E-trade? What's your thought?
Well, you know my position has been that I've been following the composite chart since we began the electronic side-by-side trading, because now the overnight is, as far as I'm concerned, a viable market. I mean, it's the start of the new day. I believe that many of the old traders still follow the pit charts, and that's where we come to the rub sometimes. And even your advisors who are writing comments, you find follow the pit trade and talk about, you know, talk about gaps and everything else. At the moment, it appears that the pit trade is probably the one that the majority of the market looks at, and yet at the same time, the pit trade, for how long now, does not represent the market. You know, it's the electronic trade that's doing that, and so I think it's a mindset, and it's difficult for people to look at it. When you look at a composite chart, there are no gaps. The gaps are gone.
Jackie, I got a basis question back to you here. We're 30 miles from the Illinois River where we're at, and our local basis is about 95 under on beans and 35 under on corn. The way I understand it, the delivery process is along the Illinois River.
Right.
And the way I understand it, the commercials are the major players.
Right.
Why in the world is my elevator such a wide basis when they can hedge that and deliver that and make a fortune?
Well, gosh, I guess to me, what it says, what I'm seeing out there anyway, is that, you know, I think they got hit pretty hard with a lot of deliveries. We had a lot of people who sold in the July contract early on. So there's a lot of deliveries coming in against the July contract. And basically, you know, they're more or less saying, you know, if you're willing to sell it at this basis, well, we're more than happy to take it. But otherwise, you hang on to it. And so I think, you know, it's the same thing. Look what happened in beans. We just lost the 70-some cents in beans, right? And when you look at the Dakotas and you look at Minnesota areas, we've got anywhere from $1.50 to $2 under basis right now on top of that.
Jackie, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Jackie Vakes is with the Stewart Peterson Group, joins us from West Bend, Wisconsin. Now, a final word from our panelists in studio, and we'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel.
Well, when you look at the big picture, we feel there's the demand coming right after we get through this weather scenario.
Tom Mann?
Anything you can do to get corn put away or beans put away this fall with weak basis the way it is right now, after the first year, it's going to snap back in a hurry.
And Bill Mayer?
The marketing job right now is to plan for the next chance that you get to make some sales. Look at rolling some puts down if you have those on. Take advantage of the market that way.
Bill Mayer, of course, is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Tom Mann with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. And Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. And we appreciate all three of them being with us for this edition of Commodity Week. You have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.EDU.